You are listening to the F11 Photography Podcast.
Chasers
of light,
to the purveyors of pictures, to all of you listening from around the world, this is the F11 Photography Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Deal, and today's pod is going to be an audio-only pod, which usually means it's just me and not Brandon. So I'm going to dive right into the subject of today. We're going to roll without a sponsor. It's going to be a shorter episode, but let's talk about the subject of the day, which is about 2 weeks ago, Canon announced that they are finally opening up the RF mount to third-party companies, kind of. There's a caveat there. The caveat, of course, being that it's only for RFS, for APS-C sensors. Now, if you're a full-frame user, this could be very disappointing for you, and I totally understand. It is disappointing because I'm sure a lot of you want to see the Sigma contemporary line, and also Tamron is in this party as well. Tamron announced another lens that they're making, and they're making it for the Canon RFS, RF mount, APS-C, however you want to say it. But I do hold hope that we will be seeing some lenses for the full frame mount as well, because the RF mount turns 6 this year. Yes, it is 6 years old. It came out in 2018. It's now 2024. The math tells me that's 6 years. And what is the widest L lens, prime L lens, that Canon makes? The 50 millimeter 1.2, which is actually the first prime, L prime, that they made for the RF mount. So the oldest L lens that is a prime lens is still the widest lens that they make for the RF mount, and it is a normal field of view. So Canon does not, 6 years into a mount, make wide-angle lenses that are primes that are weather-sealed. You know, that's pretty crazy. So hopefully there's a big announcement coming down, at least a 35 mil, but 35 millimeter, 28 millimeter, 24 millimeter, 14 millimeters. Where are those? Which is interesting, because one of the things we're going to talk about today is that the contemporary line and the Tamron line actually are wider than Canon makes L lenses. So if you're an APS-C owner, there's actually lenses now that can go to a maximum aperture of 1.4 or 2.8 that are wider than Canon L lens primes for the full frame size, which is pretty crazy. So we're going to talk about that. I want to start first by talking about the Sigma contemporary line. So Sigma announced that they are going to make 4 lenses for the Canon RF mount that are going to be used for APS-C sensors. Now, if you are listening to today's episode and you shoot on an R10, an R100, an R50, an R7, today is an awesome day for you. This is really good news, because I actually own a lot of these lenses for the Fuji X mount, and they're amazing lenses. And yes, these are going to just be lenses that have already existed, and they're just going to put a Canon RF mount on. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I actually did reviews of some of these lenses, and they're really good lenses. So let's start with a 16mm f1.4. It's about a $400 lens for the Fuji X mount and a $400 lens for Sony. It remains to be seen how much these licensing fees cost Sigma and what that means that the lens is going to sell for. Upon first look, if you notice that Canon makes an RF 16mm f2.8, that RF 16mm 2.8 is significantly smaller than this 16mm f1.4 from Sigma. And there's good reason for it. It is 2 stops of light darker. And so it's not quite a pancake lens, the Canon RF 16mm 2.8, but it is definitely a smaller footprint. This lens right here, the 16mm 1.4 of the primes is the largest one. I actually own this lens for Fuji, and the ability to get to 16mm on a crop sensor, that puts you right at an aspect of I guess a perspective of 25.6 millimeters. Well, 25.6 millimeters at f1.4, that is wider than anything that Canon makes for the L lenses. So 50 millimeter is their fastest prime that they make at the moment that is an L lens, that is a prime L lens. And so this is half that at 25.6, and it gets you to 1.4. So if you're an APS-C owner and you want a prime lens that can go to 1.4 and get to 25.6 millimeters as far as the way it looks, this 16mm f1.4 will get the job done. And it's a beautiful lens. I've used it on landscapes. I've used it for cityscapes. I've used it for environmental portrait sessions. It's right smack dab between a perspective of 24 and 28 millimeters. So a very useful wide angle lens for you APS-C owners and the Canon RF mount who are RFS owners. That's pretty awesome. So keep that in mind if you are wanting a prime lens that will do really well in low lighting situations for stuff that's wider. Now, another thing to keep in mind is you might go, man, $400 is a lot of money for a crop sensor lens. But honestly, for a 1.4 lens, I think $400, right around that $400 price range, is fantastic. Now, I keep saying right around $400 because I, once again, don't know what they're going to actually put these prices at. But it's going to be in that ballpark. Maybe it'll be $430. Who knows? But it is the largest and the heaviest of the prime lenses, but that is a relative term. Now, Fuji users, they'll bitch when they have a lens that they consider to be heavy, but Canon users, all the lenses are heavy. So I think a lot of you Canon users, if you put your hands on the 16mm f1.4, relatively speaking, you're going to go, this isn't that heavy. Fuji users just bitch more because it's a smaller system. So anytime anything's a little larger and a little heavier, they're like, oh, this is heavy. And it's like, man, go grab a 28-70 f2, hold that 4-pound lens and get back to me. So anyway, 16mm f1.4, definitely a cool lens, a lens I've reviewed on the Fuji X mount, a lens that I love, and a definitely very sharp, and I think it's probably going to be sharper than the RF 16mm 2.8, just having used it on both systems, but that is speculation, pure speculation, because I haven't actually tested it on the RFS mount yet. So but definitely one to check out. They also came out with a 23mm f1.4. Now, admittedly, I have not used this lens on Fuji because they do make this 23mm 1.4 for Fuji. But this translates out to a 36.8. So it's like a 35mm lens. It's a great storytelling lens. And of course, it goes to a 1.4 maximum aperture. Even the Canon RF 35mm 1.8 doesn't get that bright. And then, of course, you have to go back to something like the 28mm 2.8, that little pancake lens that they make, which I have and love. So if you take 28 and you multiply that by 1.6, that puts you at 44.8. So Canon doesn't really have a comparable lens to this 23 1.4. All of them are more like 45 millimeters or 50 millimeters as far as how they present, because a 28 millimeter is going to present as a 45, and a 35 millimeter is going to present as a 56. So neither of those lenses are going to present like a 35 millimeter on an APS-C. That's what this 23 millimeter 1.4 does. So if you happen to shoot on full frame and you like that 35 millimeter perspective and you find yourself on an APS-C, this 23 millimeter 1.4 is going to achieve that look for you. Now, of course, if you're new to crop factor and all that, distance is distance. This is a 23 millimeter lens. Therefore, it is 23 millimeters away from the sensor at the most active and best part of the lens there in the center of the lens. So it is 23 millimeters away, and 23 millimeters will have 23 millimeter like barrel distortion, compression, depth of field, and all that. And so that's something to keep in mind. However, because when you apply that crop to it, it presents like it's a 35 millimeter lens. So there's advantages and disadvantages. You have a deeper depth of field with APS-C with your perspective. So a 23 millimeter will present like a 35 millimeter, but then have the depth of a 23 millimeter lens. So something to get used to if you aren't used to it, but something to keep in mind as well is that if you're shooting at f1.4, things aren't going to drop off as far as focus as fast. So you can shoot at those brighter maximum apertures and you don't have to worry about focus fall off. So something to keep in mind there. Moving on, they also make a 30 millimeter f1.4. I do own this lens for Fuji, and it's a really cool street photography lens. It presents as a 48 millimeter, so it's really a normal field of view. It's what you see with your eyes. And so if you want something that is what you see with your eyes, the 30 millimeter 1.4 with that crop factor puts you at 48 millimeters. That'll be perfect. Really good lens, really sharp lens. I love that lens. I think it does an incredible job. It'll be great to see how it translates to the Canon R system because shooting it on Fuji, I've had nothing but great experiences with it. So definitely one to check out. They also have what is my favorite lens for the Sigma Contemporary line, and that is the 56 millimeter 1.4. Now, 56 millimeters, when you factor in a 1.6 crop factor, is going to come out to 89.6 millimeters. So it's effectively an 85 millimeter perspective, but with the compression and bokeh characteristics and all that of a 56 millimeter lens. Now, 56 millimeters doesn't tend to have a lot of distortion. So you get some really cool portraits without a lot of distortion on the subject. And because it has that crop applied, you are going to be far enough away from your subjects to where their face isn't going to start bulging and starting to distort from close up proximity, which 50 millimeters at a normal kind of distance will not distort, but if you get a 50 millimeter lens right up to somebody, it will start to distort. So I think the way that this lens conditions you to shoot, I think it's going to be really great for portrait photographers. And the fact that it has a 1.4 maximum aperture, man, that is going to be awesome for a lot of you. Which, by the way, respectively, the 30 millimeter is about a $300 lens, the one I just talked about. So the 16 millimeter was about a $400 lens. The 23 millimeter is about a $500 lens, and the 30 millimeter is about a $300 lens. So these are all priced right around what Canon's non-L lenses are priced at, maybe a tiny bit more. But something I do want to talk about with these is that they claim to have splash and dust resistance in them, which is something that none of the Canon non-L lenses claim to have. So that is something to keep in mind. But while we're also talking about the omissions and additions, while that's great, there's no control ring, there's no AF-MF switch, so you'll have to do it inside the camera, and there's no image stabilization on any of these lenses, so that's something to keep in mind. Now, most of the Canon non-L lenses don't have image stabilization, but there are exceptions. The 35mm 1.8 IS macro comes to mind, and by the way, none of these so far have been macro either. But one thing I will say about the Sigma Contemporary lenses that I really like is they have really big focus rings. So if you do like to shoot manual focus and you want a nice, smooth focus ring, the Sigma Contemporary line definitely delivers there. Now let's go back to that 56 1.4 I was talking about. One of the reasons I love that lens so much is it's tiny. I can literally fit it in my pocket. So if you could imagine fitting a lens that shoots at a 1.4 maximum aperture and has a perspective of about 85 millimeters, a nice medium telephoto portrait style lens, and you could fit that in your pocket, that's pretty amazing, especially considering the fact that like my 85 1.2, which yes, that's like a third of a stop roughly brighter than 1.4, my 85 1.2 for Canon is like the size of a softball and it's a few pounds. So being able to have a compact lens that you could use very effectively for portraits, I think the 56 millimeter 1.4 of all the contemporary lenses that I've tested is my favorite, and it may be the most appealing to you if you're a portrait photographer. I would take that lens over the Canon RF 85 millimeter f2 macro, which is a great lens. It's a fine lens. But for the portability aspect and for the fact that I think that the image quality is on par, obviously I've only seen one on a Fuji system and one on the Canon RF system. But if it translates the way I'm used to seeing it on the Fuji system, I think that the 56 1.4 is going to sell like hotcakes to Canon users. Now, another thing to keep in mind is that I found that on the Fuji X-mount, all of these contemporary lenses, I didn't really notice a drop-off in focus, autofocus, going to a third-party lens. And frankly, if you are familiar with Fuji, their autofocus is pretty mediocre to begin with. And so I'm excited for all Canon users because they're going to be able to take advantage of those beautiful algorithms that Canon has with their autofocus, which is just amazing. The Canon autofocus is just insane and it's super accurate. And so I'm excited for everybody who goes out and buys these contemporary lenses and puts them on their Canon cameras, their R50s, their R10s, their R7s. I think that these have the potential to be better on the Canon R series than they are on the Fuji X series or the Sony series. Now, maybe if you're a Sony user and if you use these contemporary lenses on the Sony mount, that could give you some insight as to how they're going to perform on the Canon R series RF mount, because for those of you who don't know, the contemporary line is not some new technology. It's half a decade old. It's about 5 years old. And that's actually expected that would be the first line that Sigma would launch because it already exists. They've already put it on Nikon. They've already put it on Sony. They've already put it on, I believe they make it for Leica. And then they make it for Fuji as well. So, and they actually have made the contemporary line for the old Canon M mount, their very first venture into mirrorless. So this is an older design, but it's a good design. And yes, I am confirming that they did make it for the L mount. And it looks like they make a Micro Four Thirds as well. So it'll be interesting, though. I think physically they have to be a little bigger because the Fuji X mount is a smaller mount. So I think you're going to see the top end of it is going to look very similar, but then the back end of it's going to have to expand out. The barrel's going to have to be a little bit bigger in order for it to fit on that larger Canon mount. Because even though Canon APS-C cameras have a smaller sensor, the mount size is the same as an R3, an R5, or any other full frame cameras. And so they are going to have to make some physical changes to like the barrel of these lenses. And so that'll be interesting to see. Talking about Sigma, I do want to also mention that they do have a zoom. I believe it's a 10 to 18. And a 10 to 18, if you do the math on that, that is 16 on the wide end to 28.8. So if you imagined having a 16 to 28.8 f2.8, that's what it is. You can get a 15 to 35 2.8 if you go out and buy a Canon L lens, and that's about a $2,000, $2,300 lens, I believe, somewhere in there. And this thing is $599 is the street price on it. So if you're an APS-C Canon owner, you can get a very similar type of field of view, perspective, I should say, of 16 to 28 with a 2.8 maximum aperture. And for light transmission, it's more or less the same as the 15 to 35. Now, depth of field, it's going to be deeper, which if you think about it, may actually be good if you're a landscape photographer and you're shooting at f11 and you want everything, including those foreground elements in focus. And so you may be less inclined to have to focus stack in those situations because you have a deeper depth of field. Also, splash and dust resistant, as I previously mentioned, I think that 10 to 18 is going to be a huge hit for APS-C owners on the Canon R system who want to shoot landscapes. I think it'd be beautiful for vacations as well. And it's a tiny lens. It's just like that 56 1.4. You can more or less fit it in your pocket. And so also something to keep in mind. Now, the 10 to 18, I would say one of the biggest disappointments of the 10 to 18 is it does not have image stabilization, just like their primes. So that's something to keep in mind. So unless you have the R7, which has IBIS, I don't know if it's necessarily going to make a good lens for vlogging. That's one place where the Canon RFS lenses still have the advantages. Some of their wider to ultra wide RFS lenses do have image stabilization built into them. And so you're either going to have to use an R7 for IBIS, or you're going to have to use that digital image stabilization inside your R50, R10, R100, which I found isn't the greatest, but it's better than nothing. And so definitely something to keep in mind there. But that is the Sigma end of it. They are not the only people who are part of this party. Tamron also is part of this party. And Tamron released an 11 to 20 2.8, so 2.8 all the way through the zoom range, just like that 10 to 18 was 2.8 all throughout the zoom range. And so that's going to give you a perspective of 17 to 32. So a 17 to 35 essentially, which is kind of like a 16 to 35-ish somewhere in there at a 2.8. Now the Tamron is a little bit more expensive than the Sigma. I said the Sigma was around $599. The Tamron is actually closer. The street price I've seen is $699. And I think, I want to say it's a little bit more expensive for the Fuji mount. Yeah, for the Fuji mount, it's $829. So I'm wondering if Canon licenses this out to Tamron, if it's going to be more in that $800 range. Still speculation at the time of this recording. But $829 is still less than half of what it costs to get a 15 to 35. And it's, and remember, a 15 to 35 is not going to present like the 11 to 20 is. A 15 to 35 is going to start on the APS-C cameras as a 24. And it's going to be more of roughly a 24 to 50 if you go out and buy the Canon 15 to 35. So if you buy this Tamron 11 to 20, it's actually wider than a 15 to 35. And it takes it a step further than Sigma in terms of what it claims, because Sigma, in terms of weather sealing, says that, oh, we are dust and splash resistant, but they never use the term weather sealing. Tamron is ambitious enough to say that the Tamron 11 to 20 millimeter f2.8 is weather sealed. So if you are a landscape photographer, maybe you go out and you get an R7. You could have a weather-sealed body and a weather-sealed lens. You know, you're talking around, I don't know, was it $1,500 and $829 roughly for that setup? That's pretty expensive for an APS-C setup. Yeah, that's pushing you into Fuji territory at that point. But there is an option out there if you want to use a crop body to shoot landscapes and get some fairly wide shots. That Tamron 11 to 20 2.8 will get the job done. Now, I have not personally used the Tamron 11 to 20, but I have seen examples of it online, and it does look like a very sharp lens. I will say that I have used the Tamron 17 to 72.8, which is its counterpart. So if you bought an 11 to 20 and a 17 to 70, you'd be pretty set in terms of range. The biggest disappointment in these announcements is that they do not make the 17 to 72.8, or it has not yet been announced for the Canon RF mount. And I have some suspicions about why that could be. So if you think about a 1.6 crop factor, if you take 17 millimeters and you multiply that by 1.6, that gives you a perspective of 27.2. And then if you take 70 and you multiply that by 1.6, that gives you 112. So it's kind of a 24 to 105 if you think about it, but it's really more like a 27 to 112 perspective, and it's 2.8 throughout the entire zoom range. Now, why is that significant? Well, it's an $800 lens as well, just like the 11 to 20 is, but what does Canon make that gives you a perspective of 24 to 105 in full frame and is 2.8. Oh, they make a 24 to 105 2.8, and it's a $3,000 lens. Now, I'm not making the argument that depth of field, compression, and all that is going to be the same. It is absolutely not going to be the same if you take a 17 to 70 versus 24 to 105, but your perspective is going to be similar. And so if you're on vacation and you're taking snapshots of things and you just need a lot of light let in, that 2.8 maximum aperture would be so useful for you APS-C owners out there who shoot on Canon. And so I am quite disappointed that the 17 to 70 2.8 was not announced, because I own that lens for the Fuji X mount. And I am telling you, that lens is more than just a vacation lens. I have shot agency models with it. I've gone out and shot my vacation with it. And in both instances, it does a fantastic job. You could absolutely do professional shoots with that 17-70. The only real knock I could give it is that it isn't parfocal, which could be bad for videographers out there. But it did have image stabilization, though. That was really cool. So very big disappointment on that. But I am excited that they are making the Tamron 11-20 because I think that's going to be the go-to for landscape photographers who shoot APS-C. Now, if you don't care about the weather sealing, you could take that lens and slap it onto an R100 if you wanted to, and you'd have a really nice ultra-wide setup. But I think it's crazy that you can get an ultra-wide lens for APS-C now that is weather-sealed, that is, in my opinion, better, sharper, and nicer when I think about my experiences on the Fuji X-mount than what Canon offers for non-L lenses. And unlike their non-L lenses, these have weather sealing and at least weather resistance, splash resistance, and dust resistance. So definitely got to say, I am impressed with this announcement. Of course, Canon does need to get its together and hopefully start making wider versions of their L lenses for us full framers who need L lenses at those wider focal lengths, because 6 years into the mount, it's crazy. And I suspect that the reason why Canon did let these third parties license out the technologies to make APS-C lenses is because the very reason that I just stated, they don't have anything wider than 50 millimeters 6 years into the mount that's a prime and an L lens. And I'm hoping that means that they're like, well, we need to focus on that aspect of our business, and we unfortunately can't do that and address APS-C owners, so we're going to let Tamron and Sigma do that. But if this goes on any further, man, that is going to be pretty bad, and a lot of people, I think, are going to jump ship if they want native lenses that are weather-sealed. And I think, obviously, for Canon's non-L lenses, I think the biggest missed opportunity there when you compare it to something like Fuji is, you know, the RF 35mm 1.8, the Nifty 50 1.8, the 28 2.8, none of those are weather-sealed. And I think that was a huge missed opportunity by Canon. And I think that this is going to fill that void for APS-C owners, at least, with these Tamron and Sigma offerings. But if you're not hip to how RFS versus RF works and you are a full frame owner, let's say you own an R8, you own an R5 or an R3, these lenses will work on your full frame cameras. But that is with the caveat and at the expense of the fact that it is going to throw away a ton of pixels. So like if a Canon R5 is 45 megapixels, I don't have a calculator in front of me, but it's going to, I think, effectively take it from a 45 megapixel camera down to like a 17 megapixel camera. So if you have an R6, an R6 Mark II, an R3, and R8, where it's like a 24-ish megapixel camera, I think that's going to take it down to like, I don't know, 10, somewhere in there. I don't have the math in front of me, but you know, you're throwing away a lot of megapixels if you use these lenses. Additionally, it's going to put a crop on your camera, so it's going to work like a crop sensor. So an 11-20 is not going to present like an 11-20 on your full-frame camera. It's going to present like a 17-35. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But I think that, you know, if you are one of those people who just wants a small setup, these are going to be perfect for you. You know, I have an R8 and an R5, have an R7 and R8 and an R50. And so I am tempted to get these lenses. I don't know if I'm going to, though, because I already have the big L lenses and I already use these lenses on Fuji. So if I have a situation where I want to use a smaller camera body with smaller lenses, it already exists for me. So the temptation to get it with my R50 and my R7 isn't great at the moment. I don't necessarily see the benefit of it. But if you are just on an R50, you're just on an R7, R10, R100, I do think that these are a no-brainer. And I would take these lenses over the Canon non-L lenses for the most part, like their Nifty 50. I would rather have the 30mm. Of course, these don't have the control ring. I don't think I mentioned that. That could be a deal-breaker for some of you, is that these do not have the control ring as far as I know. I have not seen an announcement on that. But if if Tamron and Sigma did say that, oh yeah, these are going to have a control ring, well, if they can keep the price similar to what they have it for the other systems, that to me would make this a no-brainer over the native non-L lenses, because I can tell from the quality that I've seen shooting it on Fuji that it absolutely hangs with some of those. And in many cases, it's better. And of course, having two extra stops of light in instances where it's like, do I want a 16mm 2.8 or do I want a 16mm 1.4? I think the 1.4 is a no-brainer. But as far as which of these lenses is for you, that is, of course, your call. But I just wanted to tell you about my experiences shooting these contemporary lenses on Fuji and what you might be able to expect when they actually hit the market for Canon. That does it for today's episode. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to today's episode. F11pod.com is where you can find us. If you want to follow us on the social media platforms that we never use, you can follow us at F11pod. But we do recommend that if you're following along on YouTube that you hit the subscribe button below. And if you're following along on Apple and Spotify, we thank you and we hope that you continue to listen. And until next time, chase light and not algorithms.
Thank you for listening to today's episode.
For more information about this podcast, go to www.f11pod.com.